Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil Advocates Radio Show, the Friday Grievance Edition. Dominic, you've been getting on my nerves already, man.
Happy Friday, Crudy, Evan, on the board, our fair audience. We have finally made it. Yeah, I was watching a little World Cup with some soccer buddies of mine earlier today, and you know how those soccer folks are. They're going nuts right now. Go Argentina.
I heard Brazil got eliminated. I hear that's
a big upset, yes.
I don't care. I got to tell you, soccer, I don't care. I'm sorry. I'm not a World Cup guy.
It's like a lot of things. I'm not really into it. Never played the sport myself. And
clearly,
hey, I'm an athlete, man. I'll take you on some soccer anytime, Crudy. If I don't have like a vested interest, last World Cup, my wife produced a big party for like a month long here in Milwaukee for World Cup. It was amazing. We had a blast. So I was watching some World Cup, and hanging out with a couple of friends who are like soccer players, played in college, they're really
Coleman.
Into it. So they help explain the game a little bit.
Dominic, I looked out the window this morning, and here in Madison, it's about 5 inches of slushy snow. Although I cleaned off the wife's car today, told her it was 9. But anyways.
We're still talking about cleaning off the car?
Yes, of course. Looked like football weather to me. It looked like football weather.
Football.
We should mention, by the way, we got some fine guests on this big program, Dom.
Well,
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin joining us at 4:30, so you better stick around for her. And the happy hour today with GOP strategist, my buddy, Dom Skeptical, apparently. What a jerk. Bill McCashin joined him at 5:05.
Well, we're going to meet on the air. It'll be fun.
I can't believe you don't know Bill McCashin. And we're going to talk about Benedict Cinema at some point, but let me tell you this little football story I heard on Whitey Righty Talk Radio, a national show, doing a little football analogy. Some Wisconsinite, some cheesehead, sends in this analogy. Donald Trump, and you Wisconsinites, you'll know what I mean. Donald Trump, as a politician, was the Brett Favre of politicians. Now, he excited the base, obviously, through lots of touchdown passes. Unexpected could happen at any moment when Brett Favre was the quarterback or Donald Trump was the president. But then there were also some bad things that happened, right? Favre tended to try to rifle him into triple coverage on occasion. I believe he's got some of like the all-time interception records for the NFL as well. Right. So Brett Favre could break your heart, much like Donald Trump has done in a series of elective cycles. But here was where the analogy, anyways, here's what he said. Favre got replaced by a superior player, a better player, one might say, a generational player in Aaron Rodgers. Donald Trump will be replaced with the generational politician that is Ron DeSantis.
Oh, God.
And I heard this analogy, and I'm waiting for Jordan Love. You know what? Because it's about time. It may be time. Sorry to say this, Packer fans. It might be time to turn the page towards Jordan Love. And I know we beat the Bears. He still owns the Bears. But everybody else, he's looking a little long in the tooth and a little threadborn this year. Talking about A-Rod. So anyways, who's Jordan Love in that analogy? The kid out of Iowa? What was his name? D's Nuts?
Well, it's got to be, what, the third up-and-comer Republican behind DeSantis? I mean, who's that going to be?
Scott Walker?
No.
The second coming of the Wankinator.
Come on, Lynn Dickey has long been gone.
Lynn Dickey has long been gone. Anyway, so that's my bad analogy for the day, Dom.
Thank you. I'm sure it won't be the only one.
Probably not. We'll take your phone calls. 844-967-2789. On Fridays, you call in, you air the grievances, and since we have fine guests today, that will not be your problem. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin coming at 4:30 Central. You better call now. 844-967-2789. But Dom, let's talk about Benedict Cinema showing her true colors, right? We got some sound of this too. I don't know if I want to play this sound. Cinema leaving the Democratic Party and registering as an independent. And you asked me, Dom, what's that even matter? What's that mean?
What's that mean?
Well, I look to the reporting of CNN. Arizona's Senator Kyrsten Sinema is leaving the Democratic Party, and I say, bye, Felicia, and registering as a political independent, she told CNN's Jake Tapper in an exclusive TV interview. And
ooh,
if she
exclusive.
Went to CNN.
She loves exclusive.
The exclusive part was the viewership if she went to Jake Tapper on CNN. I'm just saying, they're a little off since 2020. Here's her quote. I've registered as an Arizona independent. I know some people might be a little bit surprised by this, but actually, I was not surprised. But anyways, I think it makes a lot of sense, Cinema said in a Thursday interview. Maybe we should just play the sound. But my thought was party of one. This is the most selfish, self-serving act. I can't remember the last time we saw an act that this was this self-serving. I mean, it's not surprising. She's been, you know, sticking it to Joe Biden and the Democratic agenda he got elected under, because, you know, people elected Joe Biden because he said, here's what we'll do. We'll have the Senate and we'll have the House. And between her and Joe Manchin, they pretty much stuck it across the board. You know, her pet issue, Dom, keeping corporate taxes low for rich people. You
well,
know, because
helps
y'all
the donors,
help.
Right?
You
I
think?
Mean, listen, and I appreciate what you're saying, and perhaps some politicians are more self-serving than others, but they're politicians, man. I'm not surprised at all.
Dom, what have you told me many times through the year? Nobody better represents the needs of Dominic than Dominic, something like that.
F&A, baby.
Nobody
that's the truth.
Better represents the needs of Kyrsten Sinema than Kyrsten Sinema, but the constituents of Arizona, I think they're a lot less convinced on. Now, the question becomes, you know, what happens to the math? So Sinema's move away from the Democratic Party is unlikely to change the power balance in the next Senate.
Unlikely.
Unlikely, but good. Democrats will have a narrow 51-49 majority that includes two independents, my boy Bernie Sanders and Dom's buddy Angus King, the steak man of Maine. While Sanders and King formerly caucus with the Democrats, Sinema declined to explicitly say that she would do the same. She did note, however, she expects to keep her committee assignments, a signal that she doesn't plan to upend the Senate composition, since Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer controls committee rosters for Democrats. So in other words, if she crossed the aisle, if she was truly Benedict Cinema, if she went and joined Mitch McConnell, that would actually only cast the Senate at 50-50. That would put all the power back in the vice president's hands. And you could bet your sweet ass she'd lose that committee assignment. She would be dethroned. She'd be the Marjorie Taylor Greene of the Senate. So anyways, Dom, let's play some sound. You know, you hate to not hear it from the horse's mouth or the horse's ass, as the case may be. Let's play the senator, the esteemed, from Arizona Cut 10, Cinema, showing her true colors.
Registering as an independent and showing up to work with the title of independent is a reflection of who I've always been. And it's a reflection of who Arizona is.
She's all mavericky, Dom.
Oh, man.
She's the same crazy-ass person she's always been, though. Cut 11.
I'm going to be the same person I've always been. That's who I am. I'm going to show up to work. I'm going to do my best for Arizona.
Who's playing the accompanying acoustic guitar?
I'm not clear what the source is. Is this a promo, what are, like her video, or is this part of the interview? I'm not exactly clear.
I think this is self-promotion. Isn't this all self-promotion? Cut 12, the senator from Arizona.
The realistic outcome for this is that I'll retain my committees and I'll continue to be an independent voice for Arizona. I'm going to show up to work every day as an independent, proud of the work I do for Arizona. And I'm going to continue working with my colleagues of both political parties and those who don't have a party.
And so how does that change anything then, other than you get to produce a nice little piece and you go on Jake Tapper and we get to talk about you for our grievances today on Fridays? What's the point? I expect to keep my committee assignments. Oh, you do you? Isn't it very expecting of you?
It's an exercise in self-aggrandizement, Tom. Of course.
I have no idea what that's about.
Of course you do. You're good at that. You are the Kirsten Sinema of Devil's Advocates panelist.
I am an independent. Well, let's play a couple more, Evan, while before we run out of time, let's hear what the senator had to say. Now, I think we're on cut 13.
I don't think there's going to be any real change for me or the way that I operate. And I don't think there's going to be a change for Arizonans. They can expect me to keep doing exactly what I've always done.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Great. Yeah, great. Big announcement that nothing's going to change. Excellent. Hey, everyone, I got breaking news. The sun will set tonight and come up tomorrow. Let's hear what else the self-aggrandizing Kirsten Sinema had to say. Cut 14.
Folks were aware of this decision before I made my announcement this morning, but I'm not going to talk about the conversations I had with individuals.
A natural progression. Cut 15, please.
Today's announcement is just a natural extension of the work that I've been doing on behalf of Arizona for the last number of years in the United States Senate.
And this was one of her, this is her decision. Cut 16, please.
Other people's behavior or thoughts or decisions have had no impact on my decision. This is a reflection of the values that I hold and that I go to work with every day.
And she picked her own march up music, kind of, didn't she?
Sounded like it.
True Colors.
True Colors.
We've seen them now. You know, when someone tells you who they are, believe them, right? Self-aggrandizing, self-important, self-centered, selfish, Kirsten Sinema. Trying to get out in front of the Democrats because she might lose power. Come back with us. Friday Grievances, she's mine. Yours could be next. 844-967-2789.
Diabolical sabotage. Baffalation. Beautiful.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open for your grievances right now. Call at 844-967-2789. Senator Tammy Baldwin is going to join us at the bottom of the hour.
And Dominic, I'm here in sloppy, snowy Madison, Wisconsin. The scene of the soiree this weekend is going to be the Civic Media Party. Looking forward to bringing together a cast of dozens. We're going to have a good time. We're going to the comedy club. We're going to eat some good victuals and party our asses off. So looking forward to that, everyone. Looking forward to you being a part of this program. You better hurry up and dial, though. 844-967-2789. Dom, Supreme Court candidate Jennifer Doerl. Remember the story the other day? Rutro Doerl.
Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate. Yes, how could we forget?
Well, the other ones, they get the lifetime appointments. They don't actually run for the job, or Merrick Garland might have it. But Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Jennifer Doerl pushes back on criticism of sentence for man later accused of stabbing two people. Sent him home to stab again, Dom. The campaign for Supreme Court candidate Jennifer Doerl, a Waukesha County judge, conservative, just so we're clear, is dismissing criticism of the sentence she gave last month to a man who prosecutors said went on to stab his wife's parents. Ooh, that's going to be a harsh Thanksgiving. Doerl, on November 30th, sentenced Michael Y. Liu, 36, of Oak Creek, to 4 months in the Waukesha County Jail Huber work release facility after he pled guilty to three misdemeanors, battery and criminal damage to property, both as domestic abuse and contact after a domestic abuse arrest. He was convicted of punching his wife in the shoulder and smashing his children's iPad. Darrow gave him 2 days until 6 p.m. on December 2nd to report to work release. Prosecutors said that instead, Liu traveled on December 1st to Crete, Illinois, a suburb about 35 miles south of Chicago, and stabbed a man and a woman in their 60s and fired a gun at their house. He's now being held in an Illinois jail on 16 counts, including 2 counts of attempted first-degree murder. The Wisconsin Democratic Party criticized Doro, a conservative, saying she displayed hashtag poor judgment. And that put a victim of domestic violence and their family in the indirect danger. And Dom Doro's campaign, they responded in a statement that gave Liu, she said, she gave Liu double the sentence prosecutors requested, 4 months instead of two, and that the 2 days she gave him to report to the Huber facility were less, I tell you, than typically given.
Crudy, the campaign also noted that Liu had no prior criminal record, that he had entered a treatment program voluntarily in August after he was charged. A letter from the counselor at the program, which is for men who have been abusive in a relationship, noted Liu demonstrated a high level of commitment to the treatment process and the prognosis is good. Liu also received a letter of support from his employer, where he worked full-time as a director of engineering, supervised 15 people, according to court documents. Campaign also noted that no one at sentencing hearing requested that Liu be taken into custody immediately. In deciding to sentence Liu to 4 months in jail instead of two, Doro said she wanted to hold him accountable, according to a transcript of the plea and the sentencing hearing. Quote, I want to send a very strong message to you. This behavior is not something society condones, she said. And despite your lack of prior record, the violence, in fact, the most aggregating violence, in front of your children demands swift and stiff response by this court. Of course, she'd gained the judge widespread recognition for presiding over the trial of Darrell Brooks, now convicted in the Waukesha Christmas parade attack. And of course, she jumped into the race. We talked about it, some of the details in the past. And I would wonder from my conservative friends, even for our Dems, certainly there's guidelines, right? And she went beyond the guidelines and things still went south. So should she be criticized for not putting him in jail immediately if she was concerned about this behavior? Well, sure. Those things are always there. That's why these are judgment calls. And many times things will be fine and sometimes they won't be. But that's why you make those judgment calls. And this judgment call, based on the facts that we know them, was wrong. While she gave him more time than she had to, she could have told him to go to jail right away. She could have. She didn't.
Because that's not what happens. You know what I mean? You get convicted and you get a couple of weeks, couple of days, get your stuff together. Get your affairs in order, Michael. Yes, before you head off to jail. Also, the fact that the ultimate destination for this convicted domestic abuser was a Huber facility. That's not a secure detention facility. That means that's day camp. 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, this guy's eligible for work release to get out and apparently go supervise 15 other engineers in the field. He had good work prospects. Hell, he's got better work prospects than some in radio do.
I don't know about that. But if the criticism is, hey, no matter what you did, here was the result. You could have done something different. If that's the criticism that Republicans seemingly would take and put on all sorts of other people who aren't Republicans, and certainly her conservative adversaries in this Wisconsin Supreme Court race are going to bring this up.
Well, Dan Kelly absolutely will tar and feather her with this incident. And I don't think, honestly, I'll be honest, I don't think it's fair. I don't think it's fair in the case of Mandela Barnes. Because he's the lieutenant governor. Somehow he's responsible for the actions of some dude, Darrell Brooks. But that's the way it was cast during the political cycle, sure. Of course. But I also don't think it's fair to hold the judge accountable for the actions of the perpetrator. A, she didn't stick the knife in his hand. B, this guy was taking all the steps, right? He was in the first offenders program, doing the domestic violence classes. And I hate when a singular case, not actually perpetrated, it's different if the judge is being held up for corruption. I mean, if it's Gableman, let's talk about his corruption. But in this case, no, I don't think it's fair to tar and feather her, but doesn't mean conservative Dan Kelly won't. We got a fine guest. She's coming next. She is U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, the returning champion. Stick around. It's the Friday edition of The Devil's Advocates.
See, we let him go. Terrible idea. Why did you let us do that? It's so bad.
The Devil's Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
Night. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. It gets better right now. We welcome back a fine guest, the U.S. Senator from the great state of Wisconsin, my senator. She is Tammy Baldwin. Tammy, welcome back.
It's great to join you again.
Well, you, happy holidays, Senator. Before we jump into the fun stuff, because this is something of a victory lap as I perceive it, but gotta bring up the day's headlines. We do our Friday grievances. Bear with me, Senator. I was still celebrating the Warnock victory in Georgia and the 51-49 math that cast and the committee assignments that transfers through to the Democratic Party. And I see your colleague Kyrsten Sinema today has effectively declared herself a party of one. Tammy, practically, what does that mean to the Democratic majority in the Senate?
You know, I doubt it will end up having a lot of practical effect at all. We all knew that Kyrsten Sinema was a pretty independent type anyhow. And we have other independents, Angus King of Maine and Bernie Sanders of Vermont, who are declared independents, but caucus with the Democrats. That's going to remain the case. And so I think her party change kind of reflects who she is. She was actually one of the senators that I worked most closely with in passing getting the bipartisan majority we needed to pass the Respect for Marriage Act recently. And she's very effective and helpful. And I expect to continue working with her on many issues to come.
Senator, we certainly want to talk about the Respect for Marriage Act. That's the victory celebration as I see it. The bill apparently will be signed into law. Dominic informed me President Biden expected to sign it on Tuesday. Tammy, will you be at the White House for that ceremony? And this, to my perception, Senator, might be the most important legislation you've shepherded through in your career. But you tell me about it. It's your turn to gloat.
Well, I plan on being at the signing ceremony. It should be, it should be wonderful. And I have to tell you that it was a hard fought process to get the Respect for Marriage Act passed in both houses. But what has been most touching to me is all the times that somebody's come up to me either during this debate or after it passed the Senate to say, this really matters to me and my family, and thank you for doing it. And I've had so many people tell me that they feel like this is one of the most relevant things that Congress have ever done that impacts their lives. And I am very moved by that. You know, in some ways, the Respect for Marriage Act, you know, it's sad that we even had to be bringing it up. The reason it was brought up was because this past summer, the Supreme Court decided that that Roe versus Wade should be overturned, that it was wrongly decided when it was decided nearly 50 years ago. And in an instant, we saw half of America become second-class citizens. But it was very clear when you start looking at that that Supreme Court opinion that this same activist court could well go after other cases that were decided along similar lines, whether those are the marriage cases banning or forbidding the banning of interracial marriage, or the marriage equality case, or access to contraception. I mean, there's a whole line of cases that were decided on similar constitutional and legal grounds as Roe versus Wade that were in jeopardy. And people were scared that after fighting for decades to be able to protect their families through marriage, that this could go away in the future. So when the Respect for Marriage Act is finally signed into law, people will be able to rest easier knowing that they can still protect their families.
Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin joining us. Senator, thank you. Congratulations. Many of us have gay family members and friends, and we certainly appreciate that. And it is a shame that we have to go through this seemingly again. There were some exceptions, some, to my understanding, to allow for religious concerns. Senator, what exactly did that look like? How did that change the bill? And how did the Republicans eventually come along as you shepherded this bill?
Yeah, so we originally introduced the bill earlier in the year, but as it appeared that we had a real good chance of passing it with a filibuster-proof margin in the United States Senate, I started having conversations with a number of Republicans who I thought for the very same reasons you celebrate it, you know, they have family and friends and staff members who are in same-sex relationships and marriages, and they want to see them flourish and want to see those rights continue. But I was talking to people, and there were a number of folks who raised concerns. In many cases, those concerns weren't necessarily threats. So, for example, there was a request to create clarity that polygamous marriages were not going to become legal. And, you know, if we can clarify that, we're happy to clarify that. In addition, I think it was really important to say that the Respect for Marriage Act really maintains the status quo with regard to laws affecting religious liberties. It changes them in no way. And if putting clarity in the bill so that perhaps a Republican member who is getting a lot of heat from home from certain folks, you know, can just point to the bill and say, I worked with the sponsors to get this changed so we could clarify that issue. And that gets their vote. That's really important. And I will say that because of our efforts, extensive efforts, really careful efforts, we ended up winning the endorsement of some major religious organizations that I think not so many years ago, you couldn't imagine that the Mormon Church, for example, would endorse the Respect for Marriage Act, or the Orthodox Jews, or the evangelicals, one of the groups of evangelicals. But indeed, that ended up happening, as well as obviously the civil rights organizations. So it was a lot of hard work, but we really did reach clarity so that people, enough Republicans could become comfortable to move forward with this measure.
Our fine guest, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. Tammy, Mike Gallagher from Republican, from right here in the great state of Wisconsin, Green Bay area, he effectively changed his vote. From summer until now, he evolved on this issue, and he expressed the specific clauses regarding polygamy and religious freedoms as the reason why. Brian Stile joined him, one other Republican from Wisconsin. But your colleague Ron Johnson voted against, as did every other Republican congressional member from the state of Wisconsin. Does that mean Republicans have no respect for marriage? How do you take this, Tammy?
Well, here's where I begin. Public opinion has changed dramatically in recent decades. I mean, this The vote that we got was unimaginable even a decade ago, before the Supreme Court decided the Obergefell case in 2015, declaring marriage equality the law of the land. Some of my Republican colleagues have been impacted by those in their lives and those among their constituents who are in marriages, worried about whether the Supreme Court might overturn marriage equality at some point, and wanted to get to yes. At the same time, they wanted to be able to tell constituents of faith communities in their states that they had safeguarded religious liberties in the process. Other colleagues of mine didn't want to get to yes. And so, you know, I think we offered a number of opportunities for others to offer amendments. But in the end, you know, they didn't come forward and offer language to address their concerns. And so I can't speak for them, but I do know that I was pleased that enough of my Republican colleagues wanted to get to yes on respect for marriage.
Senator, not to rest on your laurels, still doing more work. The Reproductive Health Travel Fund Act. We talked about Roe v. Wade as kind of the impetus for this, and the court's reaction and their comments on how some of these other cases could be looked at. What are you attempting to solve? What's your point? What are you trying to do here with this Reproductive Health Travel Fund Act?
Well, let's take Wisconsin as the perfect example of this. When Roe versus Wade was struck down, Wisconsin has a law still on the books. It was passed in 1849. Yes, everyone heard me correctly. 1849, 1 year after Wisconsin became a state, is a criminal abortion ban. And the only exception is for the life of the mother. I've been hearing such heartbreaking stories about what that has meant for reproductive health care access and abortion care access for women in Wisconsin. I've heard of at least, I've heard several cases where a woman had to bleed excessively, or her fever had to go to perilous levels before she could get care in the state of Wisconsin, because her life was in danger. And we also know that we are surrounded by states that have different laws. They don't have laws that were passed in 1849. And in fact, abortion care is available in Illinois, in Minnesota, and other states in the area. The travel fund is a way to help women in Wisconsin who have become second-class citizens, like half of America has, have access as they did before, and make it not so expensive or cumbersome that they cannot access comprehensive reproductive health care. And that means a travel fund, and it means allowing grants to organizations that try to facilitate access.
Senator, codification of Roe v. Wade seems unlikely under the current makeup of the U.S. Senate. As a voter in Wisconsin, I got a 20-something daughter. She would like to return here someday and have reproductive rights. Is it the state Supreme Court? Is that the remedy for Wisconsin women, for Wisconsin voters, as you would see it, Senator?
It's a key piece moving forward. And I want to just say, I think about how long the opponents of Roe versus Wade plotted to get to this point where, after nearly 50 years, it would be overturned. It is not going to be a straight line. It is not going to be a short-term effort to restore women of America to, equal rights and first-class citizenship. But one of the pieces since the overturning of Roe versus Wade means that you follow the law in each state. having a Supreme Court in Wisconsin that would scrutinize that 1849 statute and see whether it is still valid under our state constitution and federal constitution. Those are ways in which we might provide some relief in a shorter term. But this is going to be a long battle, just as the battle to secure reproductive rights were to begin with. This is going to be a long battle to restore them.
Senator, your team tells us we have a few more minutes. Excellent. More with U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. More Devil's Advocates, the Friday edition. Stick around.
Thank you.
Good luck. We're all counting on you.
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
Devil's Advocates radio show. If you miss any of this fine program, please go online to civicmedia.us. You can listen to podcasts and interviews.
Dominic, we got a fine guest. She's sticking around for us, U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin from the great state of Wisconsin. Tammy, appreciate you sticking around. I want to talk a few issues. Heard a lot about the inflation in the midterms. Now, I drive up the road here, University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin. Gas is under $3 a gallon. Gas, obviously, the cost of transportation ripples through the entire economy. New studies, economic studies I see out today say effectively we do not have a wage cost spiral, meaning that higher wages drive up costs, drive up wages, drive up costs. That is not happening, at least not in the current sense. So as I understand it, Tammy, effectively the current inflation is a result of higher profits. Inflation equals profits. Senator, do you agree with the economic assessments I'm seeing of late?
I certainly see that in certain sectors, not necessarily across the board. But I take your example of the price at the pump. It seems like big oil has had very handsome profits in the time where we've seen the price at the pump go up so much. And, you know, there's a number of, just recently we voted to avert a rail strike. I look at what those freight rail, almost monopolies, but they're not quite monopolies. I look at what they've raked in at a time when they've been cutting their workforce and working them to the bone. There are certain sectors of our economy where it just appears there's been price gouging and profiteering because they could, and that it wasn't necessitated because of the laws of supply and demand. Now, granted, let's take the price at the pump. I certainly expect when there's a big shock to the system that we're going to see a fluctuation in price. So, for example, when Russia invaded Ukraine and we were trying to get the world to stop by buying Russian oil, there was a fear that it would be a significant supply shortage. I can understand why it would go up a bit, but when that evened out because we were tapping the strategic petroleum reserve and we were creating more biofuels and ethanol to fill in the gap, they shouldn't have stayed that high. So I think we have to empower our Federal Trade Commission to be able to investigate price gouging. Right now, they think they lack the authority to do that. And if we're going to protect consumers and also hold these big corporations accountable, we have to have more effective oversight.
Tammy, we've seen a rapid spiking of interest rates, yet we see continued hiring in the economy. Employers don't hire unless they think they can expand profits. It seems like it's the American consumer, probably their buying power, at least through the housing market, Tammy, that are going to be squeezed the worst. I am fearful of the perhaps remedy the Fed's using here. Do you have any concerns about the raising interest rates?
You know, I do. I think that we would certainly be better off if that if the increases tapered down. But I would also say that, you know, the tools that they have to fight inflation are blunt instruments. It is not something, you know, they have a limited number of tools at their disposal. They're trying to keep inflation in check. And we're not going to see this sort of cause and effect because, again, it's a blunt instrument.
Senator, back to the oil for just a moment. I did notice yesterday Bloomberg reported that Exxon raised its annual buyback by about 10% to, what, $50 billion stock buyback after it posted its highest profit in its 152-year history. Your colleague, Senator Sanders, has proposed a windfall tax for those kinds of things. Is that something that you would support? And if so, if not, whatever, is how realistic is something like that in today's political environment?
Yeah, well, let me tell you my proposal, which is to stop stock buybacks. You know, they were not available to corporations prior to the early 1980s. It was viewed as insider trading. I mean, think about it. You're the corporation, you know what's happening, and you then announce that you're going to buy back your own stock. It's obviously something that is, it's able to manipulate both the price of the stock, but also so many of the executives are compensated through stock. So it's, I just think it's something that should be abolished. I've introduced legislation that would go back to those days where they weren't able to do it except in the narrowest of circumstances. And also, the other part of that measure allows workers to elect people to the board of directors of corporations. Maybe they would make decisions not to buy back stock, but instead make decisions that think about the workers and the communities in which they exist. And I'm not against dividends, by the way, but stock buybacks are another creature altogether. That's the direction I'd go in, but I certainly applaud any legislative action to rein in this this practice.
Senator, less serious. Any plans for the holidays? Home for the holidays, hopefully, Senator?
Well, that depends on the schedule of the Congress of the United States. I have been in this institution when we worked to Christmas Eve and then worked to New Year's Eve. It was very, very sad, was Grinch-like. But I do hope to be home. And I also hope that we get our work done in a timely manner. And I'm very much looking forward to Christmas and New Year's and time in Wisconsin.
Do you think Kevin McCarthy will ever be Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I know he has to navigate his own minefield, but boy, I think it's probably going to happen.
Final. Senator, in the last 60 seconds, my understanding there might be some push for legislation here before the end of the year. One of those topics, legalizing weed banking for those that are involved in the cannabis industry. What's your sense on that?
Well, it's certainly an active part of our discussions in the year end, the SAFE Act. And, you know, it causes for those states that have legalized recreational use, it is actually unsafe to have to be in a totally cash economy. And we're seeing some unfortunate consequences of that. I think it's a possibility. I do think there's a lot of Republican opposition. And so I'm not sure that it's going to sneak in before the end of the year.
U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Thank you so much for joining us on The Devil's Advocates.
Thank you, Senator.
And back at you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays.
Thank you.
Thank you for standing watch. Thank you for doing so much good for this country